Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life Radio. This episode is dedicated to sharing personal experiences such as a dream, a vision, after-death communication. We would love to hear your story. We would like you to join us as we explore the types of experiences that people have, what they mean, and how we can integrate them into our daily lives. Although mediums provide a valuable connection to the deceased, this particular show centers around your direct experiences that don't specifically involve a medium. So I would like to give you our call-in number, so please get your pen and paper. 888-627-6008 and 323-744-4831. And last month, on the fourth Thursday of the month, when we had our personal stories event with you, we had so many callers that we were so excited and wanted to give everyone a chance to tell their story or make their comment or ask their questions, that we rushed. So tonight we're going to slow down a little bit and really just savor each experience and give each of you a chance to reflect with us and with each other. Tonight's co-host, besides myself, I'm Kimberly Saavedra, director of the Comlock Center in Claremont, California, are Janet Mayer, Forever Family Foundation certified medium and author of Spirits, They Are Present, and Dr. Betty Kovach, author of The Miracle of Death, There is Nothing But Life, and Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That is Changing the World. So welcome, everyone, and good evening, Janet.
Good evening. It's great to be here and to see you guys again.
You too. Do you have something to start us off with until we have a caller?
Well, there's one thing I would like to bring up is something about last month when one of the callers had called in and she spoke about a heart that she found on the counter, and I really hope she's listening to this because I wanted to add something. She, you know, when she said that it just appeared, it, you know, if some people aren't aware, that's called an apport, which can manifest from spirit, where something can just appear out of nowhere, and sometimes it's something small or tiny. Sometimes things can disappear around you, you know. I mean, it could be the same way. It goes on both sides. And I thought that it was a really wonderful story when she was telling us this, and I wanted to make sure the callers knew that, you know, that that is possible for that to happen with the apports, and that it isn't something that happens to everyone, that's for sure. But I do know that that's happened with different people that I have met and crossed, you know, paths with, and I thought that was really a really cool story to share, and that was definitely a gift from spirit, which how wonderful is that? If we could all get that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I am so sorry we were rushing through, panicked, didn't know what we were doing, and didn't give you a chance to say that, because that's so valuable. I mean, that helps me, too. I've not had something like that, but I love to think that I will sometimes. So I really hope that the person who told that story hears you now.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And if not, you know, for whoever's listening, it's just kind of another, you know, a little bit of tidbit of information to hold on to.
Yeah, so that you don't think you're crazy if you know something's appearing.
Yeah. And Janet, you've told some experiences over the months about objects moving, too.
Oh, yeah. I've had different things happen along the way, you know, over the months. And sometimes, you know, I think actually this has happened to me probably for over 20 or 30 years. I've had experiences, and this isn't something that happens all the time. It's just every once in a while there'll be something that will move. Like I was having a reading in the morning, and, you know, I always ask Spirit to give me a sign or to show me something that I need to see, and it doesn't have to be physical. It can just be something mental, and the one night I heard something move in my office, and the next morning I woke up, and I walked in, and a picture that was sitting on my desk was completely turned sideways. And, I mean, it was really interesting. It was a picture of my son. And what was really cool about it was, you know, the story also would relate in, you know, some way to the person that I was reading at the time. But it was really fascinating to me because there is no way, you know, a picture frame that's, you know, a 5x7 that's kind of facing you when you sit down would be completely sideways. And so I took pictures of it, you know, and sent it right away to some of the people I knew, like, you're not going to believe this.
Well, but I remember when we did a webinar together that something happened in your office right after that webinar. Do you remember that?
Well, it could have been, yeah, I have, well, there were a couple things on my desk that has moved over the years. And, you know, where I sit down when I work on readings, I always write everything down before I do a reading. And, you know, so I guess I have a habit of something, you know, I pay attention to everything on my desk. Everything is situated in a certain way. And I have little, you know, either like I have a bowl of rocks, as I put it, crystals on my desk, and I have a little angel on there. And I had an angel that had moved, and it had completely moved like from facing, you know, and I have things like, I don't know if people have that on their desk, kind of facing them, you know, they're looking at pretty things that they like.
Sure.
And in this case, there was an angel that also moved, and it had completely turned, you know, to a different direction. And then on another day, it turned a different way. So it wasn't like, you know, you're walking across the floor and it would move and always go the same way. It went from one way to the other way. And I thought that was very, you know, interesting as well, but. You know, I was just going to say, it's just always really interesting that you just never know what's going to happen. And that's why I always suggest people to pay attention to what's going on around them. Because if you're paying attention and you're kind of being focused on what is going on, then you can pick up something that's out of the ordinary that you wouldn't normally maybe see if you're just walking past something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't experience things like that, and with objects, I have dreams and visions, but those other things don't happen to me, and I think it's wonderful that they do happen to people. You're certainly evidence that they do, and our caller was also had that experience. But I had a dream that was so profound once that had to do with. Just, I think, paying attention. I think I was still in graduate school when I had it, and I was so focused conceptually on things. Mm-hmm. And, I had a dream that I was in Budapest and that I had a sieve, and there were little stones on the sieve, and I was kind of moving them, and suddenly there was a hand, not connected to a body, but a hand just raked the stones off and said, "Those don't belong in the city." And then the next scene was that there were several people, and we were all in a circle and in a ritual, and we were deeply meditating and walking around these massive standing stones. And it was the dream, but it had such an impact on me because it was very clearly that hand of the rational mind that could not see significance in these pebbles, which really, when we paid attention and shifted our meditative beingness into a state where we could see them, they were magnificent, mysterious standing stones.
Wow.
And I often try to remember that dream, you know, I do remember it and think I don't want to be the hand that doesn't see the magnificent stones that are really there if I knew how to look at them, you know.
Right. Well, you know, and you have the one thing I always find so amazing with you too, Betty, is you have such intense experiences in your dreams. You know, even if like you have, you know, a normal dream and it's something that kind of hold on to it, it seems like yours are so intense and so full and they have so much life in them that it shows you that it's more than just a dream. And, you know, yes. You know that. And when you even say it's a dream, I always want to stop and go, oh, no, no, it's so much more. It's so much more. But I know that's how we recognize it, you know?
Yes, those dreams, one remembers always, and they still have an energy in us, you know?
Yes. That's exactly what it is. It's the energy, which is, I mean, it's wonderful to hear.
Well, and like Janet, you always say that we need to thank Spirit for the gifts that they give us. And Betty's way of honoring and thanking is to do the writing down, too. So I think you both are very keenly aware of the reciprocal relationship with Spirit and just acknowledging and creating space and expressing gratitude and openness. It really just keeps the door open.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, writing them, like you said you do, Janet, and I do too. I always find that in the process of writing, I become more conscious.
Yes, yes. Well, and, you know, I always look at it too that, you know, every personal experience, it's sacred. And when I remember that and I remind myself that, then it's even fuller than what it is. Because otherwise you can just kind of, you know, share something with somebody, but it's when you kind of remember that this is your own personal experience, nobody else can take that away from you, and maybe nobody will always understand it, but when you connect with someone else who has an experience, it kind of blossoms and it becomes more. And then it's, you know, it's almost like you're sharing the sacred experience with, you know, a whole group of people that all of a sudden they're kind of feeling it too, and they realize, wow, I had something going on and I didn't realize that it was so important because I just brushed it off because I was never taught to recognize it. And so I think that that's one important thing too with this show is to remind people of that, that, you know, what you're going through is very, you know, it's a lot of it is grief. Yes, that is true. But it is also a lot of sacred experiences that you're having that when you start putting them together, you start seeing this pattern kind of play out in front of you that is individual to each person.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and I think, as we talked about before, that sharing intensifies that energy. It's like both minds then and hearts focus on that and intensifies the very energy of the experience.
Right, right. That's true. That's true.
And could also reveal other aspects or dimensions that the experiencer, him or herself, might not have picked up while ruminating on it.
Yeah,
right.
It's so wonderful to talk to someone who picks it right up and knows it's something sacred, you know. And it's such a bummer if you talk to someone and they just see it as those little pebbles on the sieve, you know,
right,
and they
right.
don't see the magnificent aspect to it.
Yeah, get out of here with that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't. This
right.
show.
Right. Well, and you know, it kind of. The thing is, too, is I think with grief and when you're losing, when someone is, you know, moving on, that you kind of realize the grief is transcending us into a new place, into a new space. And it's not somewhere we ever really want it to be or we really want to go. But what it does is it kind of changes or maybe it eliminates the boundaries that we had in the past. And it makes us go into a whole different area. And I think that that's what's really important, too, about when people call in and when they share, is that they need to understand that, you know, when you're going through something and it's really deep and it's really hard and it's really difficult, when you share it with somebody, it's right away taking you out of one space and it's like putting you into this other place and it's opening this whole, you know, all these doors that you didn't know existed around you. And then you just kind of have to go through one and you have to experience that. And it's not easy because, you know, grief isn't easy. Grief is very difficult, but it's also something that when you kind of pay attention to what it is and what you're feeling and what you're experiencing and you allow all those emotions to go through, I really think that, you know, that's what I mean when I say, you know, grief transforms us. It moves us into a different place. I don't know if you feel the same way, but that's kind of how I look at it for me.
Oh, absolutely. I do agree. I mean, it has tremendous potential. It's a process that we can move from states that we think we can't survive into places where we feel quite different and we see things in such a different way. And I think eventually it can take us not only into a larger view of the universe, but it can open us to joy. I think that grief leads us to that if we allow it to work its process.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I think it's oh, go on.
No, no, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you had a caller. I was going to just share something. I remember that, you know, the one day when I was just kind of meditating on something and I decided to turn on the radio and there was a song by, I think it's Three Dog Night, The Road to Shambhala, that's it. And it was the mystical kingdom of enlightenment. And I remember thinking at the time, it was really interesting because it was like reminding me to take what feels right and to leave the rest. And that, you know, we're walking on this road, this path, and it's taking us to enlightenment. And it's almost like if we look at it, you know, people always think, oh, you have to go somewhere to find this. And it's like, you really don't have to. You can just live your everyday life and find it right in front of you. And that's always kind of cool, you know?
It is too. And it kind of illustrates the point that we can kind of regulate how much we pick up and take in and process at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
true.
When you're not
That's
ready,
true.
You might not pick up as many or notice as much along the path. But, at other times when we're more courageous or willing, we can see deeper. What I was thinking when you two were talking is, I remember something that you had written in one of your books, Betty, and you were quoting somebody, and it was basically, we need to make room in ourselves for the immensities of the universe.
Oh, yes, that's Brian Swim, I think. He was talking about an indigenous person in South America.
Mm.
Oh, yes, say that again, too.
We must make room in ourselves for the immensities of the universe.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Yeah, to make that space because we can allow ourselves to get so cluttered up that we don't have that vision to see what is here, what is present. But the immensities, that's what I need. I think our whole culture needs, you know, to make that space to take that
definitely.
In.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's, you know, I think it's kind of interesting too. I want you to say that again, Kimberly. I loved what you just said, and I have to remember that.
Okay. We must make room in ourselves for the immensities of the universe.
Okay. I'm writing that down just so I can remember that in the future because that's so beautiful. No, that's really cool.
That one too. That one, it just has some very intense impact. It's chock full of wisdom in such a short, simple statement.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Well, you know, that was from Indigenous people, but you've received, Janet, so much information like that from the Yanomami. Maybe you could say a little bit about that.
Or a lot.
Yeah.
Whatever you desire.
Yeah. Well, I probably can't say too much because I don't really know what they're saying, but I just speak it. But they normally, you know, speak prayers or they talk about the earth, and it does go in spurts where, you know, it comes through really clear and really strong. And then I feel like there's going to be some kind of earth changes that will be happening or something like that. Or it could be about blessings. And I think that that's, you know, that's kind of the way I look at it as it's a meditation for me. You know, it's when you don't really know exactly what is being said, but you have to feel it or you have to sense it. Then that's when you learn to tune in. And that's why, you know, when I always tell people to pay attention, it's like you don't have to always know exactly what's going on around you. You can just feel something or you can sense something. Like, you know, if they feel something's coming through from a loved one or, you know, they might feel it or they might hear it. They might just sense it. And it's the same with the, you know, the Yanomami languages or, you know, there's three other languages that come through. And I actually did, you know, not too long ago speak it for someone. And, you know, just it's kind of interesting to see how people react because it has a different energy. I think every time someone hears it, they feel a little different or they feel something from it. And I think that, you know, I can relate that to when somebody has an experience. You know, you're telling somebody and some people are going to get it, some people aren't going to get it. And that's okay because you're still sharing a part of yourself or sharing like the energy that's coming from you. And that's kind of how I look at it with the languages is that it's the energy that's coming through and it's not coming through me. It's coming through like the universe using me, you know, as a vessel to speak this language and allow it to come through for others to hear. So, I mean, that's kind of why I am so adamant with people to look around and whatever you're doing, or if something seems different to you, or if you feel more connected, to kind of keep going with that feeling and either writing it down or sharing it or, you know, meditating, and then just meditating on that, because it could be, you know, a loved one trying to come through and send you a message. And, you know, it could be, sure, it could be in a dream. Sure, it could be in, you know, maybe moving something in on your desk. But it could also be them coming through you in a sense that you actually got the message, you know, just sensing it. And I think that that's, you know, and you'll know a difference. Kind of like I said, you know, with Betty, it's her experiences are so intense and you can feel it, and it has so much energy there. And I think that when somebody comes through and gives you a message, you can feel that. You can feel that there's a different feel to it. There's a different intensity, or, you know, it just seems so off the wall or out of the blue, or, you know, from left field, whatever, however you want to say it. And I think that, that's a really important thing that people need to experience, or when they have an experience like that, to kind of go into it and feel it, and then write down what they felt, or get a sense of it. Or, you know, like some people say, oh, I got in the car and I hear this song. I mean, I would do that all the time. I would get in the car and there would be the same song on. It didn't matter what time of day it was. And it was just like, you've got to be joking. And it kind of got to be a joke. And I realized that it was kind of like spirit saying, hey, lighten up, you know? And I mean, so I think that, you know, that's, it's just kind of like a glimpse into a different reality, that if we're willing to go there, you know, it'll take us there.
Yes. So. Well, I think one of the major themes that I remember from the Yanomami, you writing about your experience with the Yanomami, was honor the earth. And it was almost like a mantra. I mean, it was a chant that honor the earth. It was that intense attempt, it seems, to let us hear that and sink in. I mean, of course, we were hearing the language of the Yanomami, but when it was translated, but when I heard you speak it in San Diego for the first time, it felt like a meditation. I knew something different was happening. You know, I couldn't put it in words, and maybe that's a good thing, because we couldn't let the conceptual mind take over, but there was something intense and sacred about it.
Yeah, basically the very first thing that came through was, we need to be more earth-honoring people.
That was
then,
it, yeah.
You know, we need to be more earth-honoring people. Messages will be released, honor fire, water, air, and Mother Earth. And, you know, and I remember when the first time I heard that, after speaking this for years, it was kind of like, really? That's kind of what you're telling me? I have to honor the earth? I thought it was going to be some kind of really cool personal message. And then it kind of almost, it was like, you know, hitting me up the side of the face and saying, hey, this is not just about you. This is about everybody. And it was really a message for the whole earth. You know, we need to be more earth honoring. And I think once I realized that, you know, this isn't about me, that I'm just the vessel, it was pretty overwhelming, you know. And I mean, they, you know, kept saying that, you know, to be more earth honoring, and they would say something like, you know, 23 times. And I think it was maybe 17 times. I don't remember exactly, but I you know, wrote it all down, and it just was interesting. And the it kind of was one of those things that, you know, you really have to stop and think, there's something, you know, there's this language coming through me. There's this vibration coming through me telling us to be more earth honoring. It's like, how many times do we need to hear that before people really pay attention and say, yeah, this is, you know, we're here on earth. We need to honor the earth. We need to be a part of the earth. And yes, we are spirit beings, which, you know, I think that's important too, is for everyone to remember that first and foremost, we are spirit beings. You know, we have a soul, and that we're in a human body right now, but we have to honor the earth while we're here. And I think that that was, you know, the kind of message that was just really huge for me, because I really had no idea that, you know, anything like that would be coming through. Like I said, I thought it would be something like, oh, you know, hi, Janet. You know, some kind of message that I would think would just be, you know, a personal message. And then, you know, I get this, and it was just kind of like, whoa, this is crazy, you know. So I think that, you know, just having that experience, that's why I think I love the show so much, is everybody has an individual experience, and every experience that they have is just as important as the next person. And I think that, you know, in honoring that, you know, you have to honor that. And I think that's what's, you know, so important as well.
Yes, that, you know, the comparative thing. I remember having an experience with my son after his death, just talking about the way of the earth. And he said, you know, the comparative method doesn't work, really, because everybody has, just as you're saying, Janet, a special medicine, you might say, to give to the earth. But I have to admit that when Bob and Fran told me about your experience of suddenly speaking Yanomami and going through all of the years to try to get it translated and finding out what it was, I mean, I just felt I would love to meet that person someday. I just, that seems so special, so incredible to me. And when I read then your book and the messages from the Yanomami, it just seemed like this is such a, as you said, it's a profound, sacred medicine. This is precisely to be more earth-honoring people. I mean, how profound. And they kept repeating it because we probably can't hear it, you know, very well, and or even know what it really means. We're so far away from that.
Right. Well, you know, what's really interesting about that, with you saying that, I have to laugh because I'm like, I am the most normal, down-to-earth, boring person you would ever want to know.
Not so.
And I'm like, unlike your book, unlike you, Betty, when I was reading your book, and I literally had a highlighter and a pen, and I was making notes on, like, all these pages because I'm just like, oh, yes, yes, oh, my gosh, you said that so beautifully. That's exactly how I'm thinking, but I didn't know how to say it. And, I mean, there were so many like that. So I hear when you were saying that, I'm going, no, 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 it's the other way around.
No, both ways. Oh, gosh, well, I think whatever we're doing it with others, you know,
yes.
Like you're doing it with the Yanomami spirits. And I think spirits always are flowing through you. And I think that I felt that while I was writing the book, I mean, they were experiences that I'd had, but I felt that the whole process of writing was a partnership with spirit and the merchants of light, you know, the the masters of love and light. And I wanted to learn from them.
No, and I agree. And I, you know, and you just said something too. And I was writing something the other day, and it reminded me too, to, you know, when people, like, you know, and if any callers want to call in, great, you know, we'd love to hear from you. But I also want to say too that, you know, a lot of this is, it's about, it all stems from, you know, from love. And I know that sounds really kind of corny, but it really does, is that when people have any kind of experience, when people are connecting with anyone, you know, who has transcended to the, you know, into the spirit world, it all comes from, you know, a connection of love. And that when they have that experience, I think when they're feeling it, and I said, you know, you have this intense experience, it's really kind of an intense experience of love and connection. Mm-hmm. And I think when, you know, you're talking about like me with the languages and everything, it comes from being open and accepting. And that's just, that's the exact thing when someone has an experience with a loved one, you know, who now resides on the other side, and they're having this connection, and it all stems from love.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And you know, in the near-death experiences or the experiences of the other side, is that there's always that almost always that feeling of just such a powerful love, like that they experience. First of all, it might be imaged in a person. For some people, it's Jesus, or it's others. But then it's light and love and consciousness. And they always say that there's something I could never explain, because it's love in such a vast and penetrating way. And I just think, you know, that we are capable of that kind of love, and if we can open to it. But I'm always deeply impressed with the experiences of this deep, vast, penetrating, vibrant love, like a frequency going through them. And they always say, oh, but I can't explain it. Well, no, it has to be experienced for sure.
Right. Well, and it's not an earth love. You know, that's the best way I can put it. I think I wrote that in my book with an experience I had had, that it wasn't an earth love. And it's kind of like, how do you explain that? You can't explain it unless you have that experience and it's so intense and so, you know, beyond that, you can't hardly explain it.
Yeah. You know, I, to jump back in my life a bit, I went through a time, well, so much of my life I was always searching and trying to find, but I had to go through dealing with the conceptual mind and the rational mind. I had never thought it was superior to spirit or the symbolic mind, but I feared that there might not be anything, you know, mm-hmm. and so much of my life was searching that out, and the only way I knew how to was to go to university, and there, of course, I was inundated by the dreadful scientific worldview that there's nothing but matter, and there's no meaning or purpose, and you're dead, you're dead. I didn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it, but I didn't know. But as I was going through those experiences, trying to find and having the experiences so that I would know, I had a time when I was just, I was in a vision, but I was doubting, and I going back and forth, and the Spirit said, well, that's okay. That's okay to doubt, too. You're thinking about it. You're going through it. But I realized that doubt was absorbing the light that I would have been able to feel, that my doubt was absorbing that. Mm-hmm. And I know we have to go through doubt, but, you know, to try to evaluate things. But I was closing myself off from the experience by trying to figure things out rationally. And by doing that, they let me know that that process within the vision was not allowing myself to open up an experience, you know, that it was kind of absorbing the light that was right there.
Wow. Yep. And that's, I mean, and really that's your journey. That was part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. And realizing that spirit and matter are one, that was, you know, to really realize it. And quantum physics, of course, tells us that today, is that, as one physicist said, that matter is what spirit looks like when it takes on physical form.
Matter is how spirit appears in the physical universe.
Oh, yeah. Kim Orries says it correctly.
Fred Allen Wolf.
Say it again.
It was
Fred Allen Wolf. Say it again.
Matter is how spirit appears in the physical universe.
Yeah, that's beautiful, yes. Isn't it?
Coined a nice phrase there.
Yeah.
That's really, yeah, that's beautiful. I think we need that. We need that in a book when, you know, we first come to Earth here with all those little notes in it.
With the manual. We need it in the manual.
Yeah, that's I'm right. Constantly thinking, I don't want to come back, be reborn, and have to start all over again. I hope I can remember a thing or two.
I think the same thing. Am I going to remember, you know, when I come back? If I come back, will I remember? No. And you know, and I think that's what's interesting, too, is, you know, we weren't given a manual when we arrived. And in a way, though, I also feel like we do already know a lot, but we lose some of it along the way because it's not there. And, you know, until we experience something major, you know, we go through some kind of grief or we go through, you know, something major in our life, you know, sometimes everybody goes, you know, 90 miles an hour and they don't take time to slow down or they don't take time to, you know, go within or to gain insight into what's going on in their life. And they just keep going, you know, they live like on an outer shell. They're always looking ahead of themselves and looking forward. And then sometimes when, you know, someone transitions to the other side, we're always looking backwards. We're looking into the past. We're reliving everything back there. And so we're always moving forward or we're moving backwards. And, you know, I'm always like, if we just stop and we just stay right in this moment right here and we live in this present, because, you know, our loved ones who have transitioned, they're in the present as well. They're not behind us. They're not in the future. They're with us. So it's kind of like if we live in this moment and we live in each day, we can really learn so much more than, you know, always trying to charge ahead and what's the next thing and what can I learn and what can I do? And you know, you're always learning, but sometimes it's good to just stop and stay in the present and experience what we're experiencing, whether, you know, even if it is something negative, even if it is grief, it's not negative, but it's something that will bring us down. And if you have to experience the grief, you have to go through it in order to get through that door to open it up to see what you need to learn from it or to gain some knowledge from it, some wisdom, and even the emotion and all the pain, that's, you know, that's all part of it.
Yes. Well, you know, I think that in indigenous cultures, they did have a manual, so to speak. You know, they had visions and experiences and knowledge, wisdom that they could pass on to the younger generation. So they could give them this sacred text orally, by their very beingness and through ritual. And we've lost that. But I think that what we're trying to do now is we struggle to discover and experience and know, to actually experience gnosis and know what is real, that we are trying to create a sacred text for our children, for the generations that come, so that it can help them a little bit from the beginning, where they don't have to start out with the negative world view that we were born into. That's just a fluke. We're all a fluke, and we have no influence on matter. Most destructive thing possible, and I don't think any culture has ever had anything that negative and that destructive, but that was our manual, that right. We could do nothing, that we had no effect on nature and so on. But I do think indigenous cultures did have, and of course a lot of it has been destroyed, but it still exists in many places, and I do think we are all trying to create that sacred text for our children, the children to come.
Right, right. And you know, that's one thing, too. I remember Ipu Piara, who helped me when he was translating some of the tapes. He had mm-hmm. told me about that, about, you know, they passed down their wisdom through stories. You know, and they didn't really right. have the writings. They didn't have, you know, you didn't have, you know, something you could hold, but it was through the stories and through their medicine and through the wisdom and, you know, the elders. And that's how, you know, they continued on too. And it is kind of, you know, like you said, they had some of that knowledge because they did carry it through, you know, and how many times do we have the knowledge that they keep changing it?
That's you know? True. I guess we have a caller.
Shannon from Minnesota has called us. Hello, Shannon.
Hi, ladies. Love your radio show.
Hello. Oh, thank you.
I am calling in regards to what your opinion would be on doing cleansing in your home. Like, I will burn sage, mainly for cleansing. But I had an experience last week that was rather odd because I had read where you can take salt and water and a little bit of vinegar and set it in a room to be rid of, like, negative energies. Okay. And I'm not sure what your take is on that, but it was rather odd that once I set that glass down for 3 nights in a row, my salt lamp kept turning off on its own. And when I took the glass away, it never turned off again.
Oh, wow. And what was in the glass?
You take, like, a glass of water and put salt in it, they say.
Oh, salt?
Or, like, yeah, like salt water and a little bit of vinegar to do cleansing.
Okay.
Or it's to get rid of, like, negative energies that may be in a room.
Okay. I personally don't know about that, so I can't offer a lot of information on that. I don't know if Betty has any wisdom on that. What I can say is, you know, if you feel that you want to burn sage or, you know, incense or something, I always say go for it. If it helps you and makes you feel better and feel like you feel like the energy in the room is cleaner after doing that or cleansed. And as far as the vinegar and salt, if that's, you know, that's interesting that you said with the, you know, you said your phone was turning off because of that. Is that what you said?
No, my salt lamp. No,
oh,
my
salt lamp. Oh, your salt
yeah,
lamp
was
turning
off.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was shutting off in the middle. Yeah, right in the middle of the night. So
oh, wow.
You know, it's yeah. So well, when I you know, because this year is supposed, and I mean, I know, you know, a lot of different rituals are out there because, you know, with the burning of the sage and mm-hmm. how to give, you know, with your crystals and whatnot. But I just thought that was kind of an odd thing.
Well, I think it's interesting because the salt lamp is basically kind of cleansing, isn't it, as well? It does something with the ions
yes,
in the air
is.
Or something. So maybe the
yes.
combination of the two was overpowering, and maybe the salt lamp was saying, hey, you're fine. I'm turning off because you're fine.
That could very well be.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure, but I mean, that's what I would take from it. I'd be like, it's telling me three nights in a row, okay, how many times do I have to show you this? You don't need it. You're doing fine. You know?
Well, that could very well be. No, and I always appreciate someone's opinion that's more enlightened than me, because I kind of like take everything sort of as a sign or look to see if it is a sign.
Well, and you know, you don't have to like, even, you know, take everything as a sign, just be being open to what's going on around you is really, I think that's wonderful that you're doing that. I think that's really important. I don't think that, you know, make everything, like everything that happens be like, okay, what is this telling me? Okay, what is this telling me? Because you're just going to wear yourself out that way. So what I would do is
right.
just say, you know, go about your day. And then if something kind of feels a little more energetic, or it stands out a little more to me, that always is more of a sign to me that, okay, pay attention. But other than that, I just kind of go about my day, and you know, and if I miss something, they'll circle back around and show me eventually. So, you know, I always look at it like,
for sure.
You know, when somebody says, oh, I don't want to miss a sign, I'm like, oh, no, it's okay. If you miss it, they're going to come back in another way, and they'll give it to you in a different way, or they'll give it to you in the same way. They're going to make sure. Your loved ones are going to make sure that they come through and, you know, show you what you need to know, or tell you what you need to know in their own way, or in a way that you will recognize. So, you know, don't ever feel like, you know, you have to every moment of the day, you know, it's good that you're being open and paying attention. I think that's wonderful. I just also think that, you know, don't wear yourself out either, you know?
Oh, for sure. And this is just occurrences every couple of weeks that just something might pop up and it's like, okay, you know.
That's okay. That's good. You're just being open and there's nothing wrong with it. I think that's great. Maybe that's, you know, they're just trying to, you know, it could be someone over there helping you to, you know, become more, you know, in a meditative state, or to become more open, or to become clearer, or, you know, whatever the path you may be on, it could be, you know, helping you with that. And I think that's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. She is.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
No, I said for sure she is. I know she is.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I was going to say to Shannon that I think, you know, any process that we use for cleansing, I think, can be very meditative. It focuses our intention on clearing our own inner space and the outer space. I'm sure that we learn as we go along things that are much more powerful, and which you're in the process of learning, I think. But I just think the intention is wonderful too, for the cleansing and clearing and opening for a spirit to enter.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely,
definitely.
Because when I began grieving, I kind of bought a few grief books. It's like, this is not for me at all. This is not going to help. And then I found the Forever Family Foundation, and I cannot even say thank you enough to anybody that's involved.
Wonderful.
It's changed how I feel mm-hmm. about things. And I hate the word dead and died. I wish we could have used something that was just something, I don't know, just a much lovelier word than dead or died.
Right. Well, when somebody makes their transition to the other side, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we do need a new language for a new awareness, for sure.
Oh, definitely.
We need everyone to become more aware.
Right.
But it's wonderful that you say that about Forever Family Foundation, because Fran, who's now on the other side, worked daily hours, and she put in so many years and so much energy, as well as so many other people. But it's just wonderful that energy has had the effects that it has had and is having. And it's wonderful for you to mention it.
Yes, I hope more people catch on. Yes, and are more accepting of this, that we don't die.
Say it again, Shannon, a little louder.
I said, I just wish more people were accepting that we really actually do not die.
Yes. Well, I think we're learning that. We're trying to change the old world view that even quantum physics tells us is inaccurate. We know it's not true. And of course, when we have those experiences, we know, but we're living in a world that's been programmed to believe that there's nothing. And so it's going to take time.
Right.
And experience.
And we need each other.
And we need each other. Well, yeah, absolutely.
But we're all doing it together.
Love. Yep. Well, thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you, Shannon, for calling.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If anyone else would like to call, the numbers are 888-627-6008 and 323-744-4831. We have about 10 minutes left of this episode of Signs of Life Radio, and we really would love to hear from you.
Yeah. And, you know, and while we're waiting, I'll just jump in, too, is I, you know, when she was talking about cleansing the, you know, the energy in a room or that, I once in a while will do that, too. I like even lighting incense and walking around with it and just kind of clearing the air out. And I think that, you know, it does. It does. You can feel it in the space, you know, in whatever you're using, which, you know, vinegar and salt, if that works, I think that would be great. Go for it. You know, I mean, that's something that, you know, I know people do sage a lot. And I think that, you know, and even crystals, like I will cleanse my crystals in salt water, and they tell you to do that in sunshine. You know, put your crystals in salt water or, you know, sea salt and water, and then leave them outside to, you know, get the sun.
Oh, that's, I didn't know that. That's, we'll have to try that. And we'll have to see if our salt lamps respond in the same way.
Well, I think those rituals really do change the quality of our moments, because I know even turning on the diffuser with an essential oil and or opening the window and having the incense, there are just so many varieties of methods.
Yeah. Yes. Sometimes when I'm working in my study and Kim comes in and she sees that I'm getting frustrated or cranky, she says, okay, grasshopper, let's turn on the diffuser. And it does help, you know, or a candle.
That's
something to help switch us to a just slightly different vibe, and then we can kind of relax.
Yeah, because when you're so focused on one thing and you just focus, it's just crazy, because you've got to release that focus and experience something else, and then it goes away.
Right. And that's true. That's very true.
We have our props. Whether it's a stone or a crystal or the sage, so many different things. It could be a rock from the garden that just catches your eye that feels good in your hand or empowering.
And that's true, yeah. And, you know, I think that it all kind of helps us find a balance, you know, and I don't know if that's the right term or not, but I kind of feel like sometimes it does. It brings you back to your balance and where you need to be. And even like when you were just laughing, I'm like, laughter is huge. You know, that's an important thing too. And I know that's hard to do too when people are going through any kind of grief, but I think it's also really important to find some happiness and the joy in your day.
Absolutely. I discovered that during grief that laughter was so healing. It was wonderful. And that I could laugh and that I could carry joy at the same time I could carry grief, that the human being can do that. You can carry a deep grief, and at the same time, you can also laugh. And it's really wonderful that we can do that.
Yeah, and Betty, I'm really glad that you said that, because that is really important for a lot of people out there, is they feel like when they're in grief, they cannot laugh. And a lot of times, no, you can't laugh. But there are times where when you laugh, they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean to laugh. I shouldn't have done that. And you're like, no, you need to do that. You need to have these experiences. You need to get that out. And I think that is really important and healing. You know, it's healing to move through, like I said, to that next door. And then that's also helpful.
And well, you know, I remember hearing Jean Houston talk, I think, at an IONS meeting, I believe. And she was talking about how in certain countries, when people come together, like a committee or Congress or groups, different groups of people come together, and they want to solve a problem that they have within the various tribes or groups or whatever. And she said sometimes when they would get to a point at which they saw they were getting kind of frustrated and they couldn't get through to the other either way, she said they would all just spontaneously get up and they'd start dancing around and humming and chanting and singing. And then after a while, they just sat back down and they could start actually talking and having an agreement. And I thought that is so smart, because it releases us from a particular opinion or worldview or attitude or whatever. And we just feel different. Life looks different when you start dancing.
You can't be rigid.
You can't be rigid. No, it just changes you, changes the consciousness.
It does. It does. That's really cool.
Yeah, I never forgot that because I thought, I would love to see some of those men get up in the Senate and start dancing and chanting and humming.
Right.
I think they would have a whole different attitude.
I'm thinking that might be a good thing we should suggest.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Or laugh a little.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, my gosh. That's
well,
great.
Do we have anything else that we want to talk about before we have just a few minutes, right?
Right.
Well,
right.
I would just suggest people that when they feel like they want to have an experience and they're hoping for an experience from, you know, a loved one, is to kind of give yourself a break and, you know, don't feel like, you know, if you didn't get something right away that you're never going to get something, that to allow yourself to just be open and to not be too hard on yourself, and that you probably are connecting to a loved one, and you're just, they're working their magic, you're working yours, you're trying to, you know, people think that when someone transitions to the other side that they're going to get a sign immediately, and that's just, it's just that easy. And sometimes it takes a little time, you know, I mean, it could come through a sign, yes, it could come through music or connection, or you might have a dream, but if you don't have something, I think that you have to allow yourself, you know, like when you go to school, you have to learn to practice, you have to study. And when you're having a connection with a loved one who passed, you have to open up your own energy, you know, raise your vibration, allow yourself to be open for that experience. And I think that that will also help you in having an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, know? I've had so many people say to me, I just don't dream. That will never happen to me. Nothing ever happens. I just can't meditate, or I can't, you know, and of course we meditate. We can do it any way we want to. We can sit in the garden and just observe nature. I mean, there's so many ways of meditating and letting the mind relax. But I remember that Pishti's, my son's girlfriend, had one of the experiences she had is that she was above the earth looking down on it. And she saw a lot of, like, pollution around the earth. And Pishti said to her that some of that is physical. But he said so much of that pollution is from the doubt, the disbelief that there is, or the belief that there isn't anything, and the feeling that people can't get through, that that energy, negative energy, I mean, we've been taught all of these things that are negative, but that he said that so much of that pollution around the earth is from the earth's inability to know who they are, and that they do have the energy to get through, and that, and also it's from the false beliefs, real negative beliefs that we've been taught, really. And so she said she had never thought of anything like that. That she said that she hadn't even thought about the pollution. They were pretty young. And but he said it's both. But the one that really is blocking, and this was what was kind of horrifying, is that all of that, those beliefs and feelings of inadequacy, or I can't do it, or there is nothing, that is the pollution is pretty deep, and it makes it more difficult for us to get through.
Wow.
And that was kind of a startling thing.
Didn't he call it spiritual pollution?
I think so, yeah, spiritual pollution. And so I suppose that, you know, if we're thinking that way, we need to just think, okay, I'm just going to allow my mind to send light and dissolve those beliefs and that kind of spiritual pollution around the planet so that we can all get through more easily.
Yeah, that's a good, that's true. And that makes a lot of sense. As you know, and how many times do thoughts all do that? They cause, you know, kind of almost pollution around each person. You know, there's that energy around each person that when you, that's why you have to kind of allow your light to come through. You have to change your thinking, you know, change the narrative, change, you know, be more open. And I think that that makes a lot of sense though, what he said.
Yeah, I guess if each of us can affect each other in that way, why wouldn't it be collective around the planet?
Right. Go on.
No. You go ahead first.
I was just going to say that reminded me of like an image I had a long time ago, probably in my 20s, and I had this picture of the Earth with a green neon grid around it. And sometimes the patches and the grids were like open and some were closed. And I always thought it was kind of cool looking in a way, but I never understood what it was. And I think what it was is it was different areas were heavy and different areas were light. And it's just, and it was just an image I had that I never really understood, but it always stayed with me. And it kind of relates in the same way of what you were saying, just in a little different, you know, a different picture. But it still had the same thing where some areas were heavy, some were light, you could get through it, and other areas you couldn't get through it. But it was this really beautiful grid that was around our planet. And it was a really, you know, it always made me feel like, wow, we were kind of protected, or we had this energy around the whole Earth that, you know, we could experience and use and pull from. And I always really liked that vision, but I never really quite understood it. So I just kind of created what I thought it meant.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is.
That's beautiful. And that ties right into your closing prayer, Janet. We've been given the 1 minute sign from Dawn, our wonderful producer.
Okay.
Would you mind those off this wonderful event?
Sure, sure. May all beings everywhere with whom we are inseparably interconnected be fulfilled, awakened, liberated, and free. May there be peace in this world and throughout the entire universe. And may we all together complete the spiritual journey. And that's it.
Beautiful. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Good night.